In Jeremiah, he reflects at one point that the way to truth, the way to find the refreshment of our souls, is to stand beside the earliest roads, ask the pathways of old, what is the way of good, and to walk in it. When Christ is being questioned about marriage and divorce, he goes back to the moment of creation. He doesn't just give, well, this is the logical reasoned answer, he goes back to that point where things were established in their goodness, to the act of God in the world, the power of the Lord at work as things are being constructed, as they are being ordered, looking at the way things have been established by God. And so when he does that, then we go back again, not to just, well, God established this in sort of logical sequence, but we have the story that is unfolded in Genesis. There's a narrative component to this, so that then it's not simply just the bald facts of what is true, but there's a context for it. There is a situation in which we are able to see all of this unfolding. That's why Scripture as a whole reads as a story. It's not simply a law text. It's not simply even just like a historical treatise. There is law in there. There are simple lists in a historical sense. But in the whole, Scripture is a story of the outworking of God. So, again, when Christ is asked to speak on this, he goes back to in the beginning, in Genosis, in Genesis, to see where God established what was good, what was right, what was proper, the proper relationship and ordering of all things within their context, and to see how humanity itself fits into that whole thing. So, what is it exactly then that happens with our first parents? If we look through the story, we have in the second chapter of Genesis, Adam is present and there's something missing. There's a lack, there's a need, there's this longing within him that is unfulfilled. This is not just someone who we've had everything happen and then he's just kind of moping around. The entire cosmos is laid out before him. The whole of the created order is placed before Adam. He's invited to share in the act of creation. That's the whole reason why he's given the ability to name things. And it's not just, okay, you will call this that, but it's this is how it will be known. God is inviting Adam to share in the creative work by discovering and being over that which is created. He's given a kind of dominion caretaker role. And so by making these things understood, by giving them names, then these things are able to fit not just within the context that God has established, but they're also able to share in our human context. All of these things have a purpose. All of these things have a name. All of these things fit into our life now somehow. It might be something that we never see. We might never actually see like a lion physically. But there is some way in which this being is now tied in with us. And it's an invitation by God to come and to know all that is. But when he does that, again, there's something lacking. There's an absence within him. And so from that we see that it's not just God inviting us to like know everything in just like a base factual or like a scientific way. Because it's not just know everything out there, but there also has to be an inner awareness. There also has to be a self-awareness. We take the knowledge that's out there And we also seek the knowledge that's within, to know who we are in relationship with the world and with God. And the fact that Adam knows that this is something absent, that this is something missing, that there is now a gap, it's that self-awareness that opens him up to God to be able to receive that very fulfillment. That sort of fulfillment is something that has to come from inside, but it's impossible. Naturally, it won't work. It has to come from within, and it can't. So now we have a problem. But God is not going to be stopped by just this. And when Adam recognizes it, it's not just God goes like, oh yes, I forgot. There was one more thing. I'm glad you reminded me. Poof, here's the other one. But he says, yes. He affirms that self-awareness, that knowledge, that lack. And in that acknowledgement then is given the invitation by Adam to do that great work of grace, to create anew, to refresh, to complete. And so what he does is mysterious. Adam is not aware of it. He's put to sleep. He does not experience the act. He is sort of removed from the scene so that what happens may happen privately. It requires him, it needs him, but it is something done in secret even to him. So there's a limit to that knowledge. The mystery of the power and the work of grace in his life is something that he does not experience directly. And God goes not just to like something external. He doesn't just take like a lock of hair or like a fingernail or something like that. He goes in to the place that is closest to the heart. He goes to the place that is next to the very self of the man and draws from that the other self that now is allowed to become one complete, to be able to be joined. Nature, even in its created goodness, in its created perfection, still needs grace to move beyond itself into glory. Christ will then, as God always does, take things to the next level. He'll never just leave us as we are, but always invites us to come higher, to share in that glory. And the obligations that we have to reach that are always ones that he has taken first. Like with Abram and Isaac, God does not allow him to sacrifice his own son. He ceases that act, and then he instead completes it. God the Father leads his own son, who cooperates, who hands himself over, so that he may be given for us. So now the new Adam, in the new act of creation from the cross itself, is engaged in that same work as the old Adam, to replace what we have broken, to set right the order that we have disrupted, to recreate the world without destroying the old, and to bring forth that which is new and good. So whereas Adam, in just the mystery of sleep, experienced the work of the Father, Christ takes it to the next step. It's not just in sleep, but it's in death. In that final covering, in that final obscuring of mystery. And he does not simply go near the heart, but he allows his own heart to be pierced. From within his own heart comes forth grace in his blood. So as the Church Fathers will remind us, as Eve was born from Adam's side, the Church, the new Eve, is born from the pierced heart of Christ. That perfection in love, that act that Christ comes to share with us, is then something that we are invited to, so that then, which is just natural, is again able to be brought to glory. So just the natural condition of marriage established in the beginning is not sufficient. It's elevated into the mystery of the love that God has for his church, the groom coming to claim the bride, so that then the church is able to share in that, not just sort of at the end, the consummation of all things at the wedding feast of the Lamb, but now, in the same way that we share in the promise by what is poured out on the altar, so too does the church share in that witness of the love of Christ that he has for his church and the love that the church has for her Lord in the lives of those who are married now. Become not just an image, but they become the presence of that, a sacrament. As we're reconfigured in baptism to not just kind of remind people of God, but to show in our own lives the very face of Christ, so too then in the sacrament of marriage are we called to share in that, either directly by those who witness that to each other, or if we're not, then to be able to receive the fruits and the graces that come from that lived out in others, to rejoice and to offer that back to them. So that then again we share in the context of it, so that there's not just, okay, well, this is how we're supposed to do things, but again, Christ doesn't simply just lay out the law, but he goes back. Remember the story. See the connection. Recognize the context. Understand why the Lord has established this. From that then, it will let us then have ways of looking at our life in other ways, so that we're not just at those great moments of sacramental reality, attentive to the presence of the Lord, but that we see where, how, why the Lord is working in our life now. So in those other moments, maybe not the great life-changing ones, but in other moments where we are experiencing a lack, where we're experiencing a wonder, where we do not know where the Lord is, then where do we go? Christ gives us the pattern. Go back to the beginning. We might not need to go back to the establishment of all things, but okay, where did the Lord work in my life? I'm unsettled in something, I'm wondering, I'm pondering something as well. Where do I see grace going back? How far back? What happened at that moment? What awareness did I have at that point? What have I gained now? Who were the people around me? What was the context in which it happened? Even not necessarily how did it affect me directly, but what was happening in my life? What was happening in the lives of others around me? So then when we go back to that foundational moment, then we can look forward and see, well, this is how grace has been unfolding. So that then those things that we maybe miss in the moment, those ways that grace can be hidden, that we can either be asleep to it or dead, that now we can be awakened, now we can be enlivened by the breath of the Spirit, and to see not just where the foundation was, but where the Lord is leading us, where we will be drawn by him, where we are being invited by him, and where he will take us in the end.